true. Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, an educational feature of the Clark Ewlings Foundation. The Clark Ewlings Foundation exists to provide business training and entrepreneurial learning to visual artists to turn working artists into thriving artists. I'm Daniel DeGree, your host. What you're about to hear is a talk given by yours truly as part of Thriving Tuesdays, an initiative of the Clark Ewlings Foundation on the first Tuesday of every month. You'll find it broadcast to Facebook in video format. Just search Facebook for the Clark Ewlings Foundation or RSVP from the website at clarkewlingsfoundation.org. So, I'm Daniel DeGree, speaking for the Clark Ewlings Foundation about building a path to a flourishing creative culture, one that rewards everyone, artists included. Now, the views you'll hear are my own, but some of the ideas you'll find everywhere in CHF's work. We choose the world in which we want to live. The alternative is someone dictating that for us. What kind of culture do we want? Do we want a culture that craves art, rewards creativity, invites creative intelligence to the table? Or do we prefer one that feeds on conflict, polarization, alternate social and political realities, and ever more isolated echo chambers of personal entertainment? More government support won't fix it. Wishful thinking won't shift the economic realities. No one is coming for us to save us from our cognitive dissonance, our malaise, and cultural enemy, but we have all the tools to rescue ourselves. Today, I'll be presenting a way off the island of seclusion in which art languishes, disregarded, undernourished. I'll offer a brief and practical blueprint, or at least the précis of a blueprint, for arriving at a flourishing creative economy. Now, as a start, let's reset from our daily grind and distractions, take a deep breath, clear our minds, and put art in our focus. And by art, I don't just mean a painting or a sculpture. I'm going to ask us to take this time to challenge whatever mindset we're in with the following points. Listen carefully. I'm going to say some things and then ask you some questions. Art is a business, and artists should run it. Really? Could you defend that position if someone asked you to? Is it so radical? Why or why not? What does it mean or imply? Can artists run it? What about everyone else in the ecosystem? By saying art is a business and artists should run it, are we lowering their importance? If we let artists drive the arts, won't we wreck on their impulses and inclinations which aren't always practical or market friendly? All right, next comment. We must reconceive of the quintessential artist not as starving for his or her art, but as the ubiquitous middle-class artist, prospering, entrepreneurial, and free. So is it a realistic vision to think that the average artist can achieve middle class? Why not support the idea of artists achieving fame and celebrity? Aren't those the artists that change the culture and matter? We've all been taught to romanticize the starving artist, living solely for his or her own vision, and not dirtied at all by concern with profit. What does this do to our romance with the starving artist motif? We love it for a reason. Isn't it noble? Isn't it polluted to bring in economic concerns? Why or why not? All right, next comment. Creative intelligence is the key to creative leadership. We need artists involved in the conversations around the big problems that we as humans face. Do we really think it's practical that artists and creative professionals are going to bring innovation? Really? Can we really see them sitting on boards and in brainstorming sessions for what? The space program? Behind the next app? Does it happen in real life? Are there areas where our dearth of creative intelligence is wrecking the potential for a better, more just, more prolific set of solutions to problems small and large in the world? Is this just a fantasy? Or can we see how this might actually work? Next, the creative economy and creative entrepreneurs are pivotal to our general prosperity. So what is the creative economy in the first place? Why does it matter? Why aren't we talking about it as a society or in politics or in business? Does it already exist? What percentage of the gross domestic product is generated by artists, art entrepreneurs, creative professionals? Is it enormous, or is it just a pinprick in the overall economy?
Isn't art more like a charity than a business anyway? Next comment. All entrepreneurs are creative entrepreneurs. Are they? What's the difference first between an artist and a creative entrepreneur? Do they even belong in the same sentence? Are their needs the same or similar? Do they require similar skills, similar professional networks, similar blueprints for their chosen path to success? Think about this. Can I support one without the other? And what happens if I do? Don't artists have less in common with other entrepreneurs than the latter do with each other? Okay, great. Another comment. Very simple. Art matters. Why does art matter? Does it matter? Before we answer that, how prevalent is that conviction in our day-to-day thinking as a people? We say art matters like we say, I love children, but in truth, most of us don't like as much other people's children, at least not enough to move in with them. Doesn't what matters equal the art that I like, my tribe's art? Can we get to more art that I like by supporting art in general? What does it mean to support the arts? Fund exhibits I don't even personally want to attend? If we support art in general, will I get more of the art that I like? How does caring whether graphic designers and tattoo artists prosper do anything for my love of oil paintings? Lastly, Clark Healings exemplifies, or his career epitomizes, the way forward. So why was Clark Healings important? And why is CHF, the Clark Healings Foundation, even doing all this, let alone taking its name from Clark Healings? Wasn't he just a maker of Western art? I mean, Clark Healings was a working artist, but wasn't he just a self-interested artist working on his own career who happened to do things that we now say are his legacy? Isn't it a stretch to pull out of that all the selling, marketing, pivotal projects that accelerated career, peer networks, etc.? What is there in the legacy of his career that can inspire us and from which we can draw insights? What's the alignment between what CHF is doing and saying today and his legacy? Is it a pull or is it a push? So, if any of these items are bewildering to you, I encourage you to strongly dig into clarkhealingsfoundation.org and look at what we're saying there, what we've been saying. The answers to all these questions do exist. More importantly, I encourage you to wrestle with them for your own career path. We'll provide them via a link as a follow-up to this presentation. And now, as a partial answer, which is what we have time for today in this talk, I'd like to make a few points. So how do we live in a robust culture? How do we produce a culture at a time, a robust culture at a time when we're fracturing, polarized, and creative enterprise is, frankly, an afterthought? Let's remind ourselves of where we are. So if you look around, you see political fragility, economic uncertainty, general unhappiness. That's depressing, right? But that's the point. As a people, we are depressed. You don't look back at 2021, let alone what's going on now, and go, it's a happy time. We're not happy, and we have to face it. We've got essentially a global war and a recession only partly driven by that war. We've got a big economic bubble. We have a politically fractured culture at a global level. Totalitarianism, never the friend of a creative culture, is coming back in vogue. And we're at each other's throats. We're not happy. So one might say the beast is slouching toward Jerusalem. The earth is heating up. We're settling into, if we're lucky, a mere detente as two nations living in one national entity here in the United States. Arguably, we began going in that direction in 1945 when we settled into the Cold War, and that gave us the Korean War, the Vietnam War, El Salvador, and we decided to live in a state of permanent animosity with each other, driven by munitions manufacturers, the intelligence apparatus, and munitions and chemical industries that profit from it. Frankly, there was a lot of money to be made, and those chemical makers clean your baby and also make for a sparkling kitchen, but they also do deforestation in Laos. So all of that is to say that we're now in an understandable state of fragility when it comes to the role of creativity in our lives. We have a tenuous relationship with art. We don't even now dream so much anymore. Our dreams are smaller. We don't dream of a world that flourishes, and we haven't been given a mechanism to build better dreams. The material on CHF's site is basically an insistence that there is another path, that we're working to solve that problem in a robust way. So how do we get to a robust and flourishing culture in the first place? Well, that's the entrance to the conversation we're creating. As a culture, we tend to put creatives in a box. And even we call them creatives, for goodness sake. And even the goal of showcasing artists as essential workers and ensuring they're well paid is not yet dreaming big enough. I think even those dreams are too small. I don't want to be a useful cog in someone else's wheelhouse. I don't want to work for somebody just because I have the skills. I want to do the work I'm doing and work for somebody because without creative enterprise, we don't make it as a culture. We have to move away from the merely theoretical lament toward a vision of doing something practical and economically powerful. Without that, we don't build a robust creative culture. We have to build a road for artists to thrive and creativity to flourish, and it has to be done at the economic and investment level. Anything less than that creates the same problem we had all through the Cold War, which is the starving artist syndrome. Only the 1% of artists that can be famous and only those who know the right people and happen to gain the approval of the tastemakers can make any money. Everyone else is dirt poor and living on their cousin's sofas. Now, what we're doing at CHF isn't sexy in a theoretical way, but it's actionable and it's practical. We're asking people to dig deep into the thought process of how we get a culture that we want to live in. And we're starting from the premise that you don't get a robust creative culture without a thriving creative economy. Now, I don't think that we've widely connected the dots between these big questions. First, daring to ask them, and then to dream of the ubiquitous middle-class artist. How do you actually do it? What is the day-to-day? How do you actually implement this? What's there that we actually do to make these theoretical questions a practical reality? And that's where we actually do have an answer. Now, it starts at the mindset and knowledge level. We foster a conversation around art as a business, and we empower art entrepreneurs with the business training that all other industries require to flourish. We connect creative professionals through peer networks. We encourage and nurture pivotal projects that accelerate their careers regardless of style. We train them in self-sustaining entrepreneurial practices, and we galvanize not just artists, but ourselves into a movement with a pivotal aim, which at the risk of being repetitive, is a culture teeming with creative ingenuity and newly reliant on creative intelligence. All of CHF's programs, of which there are many, are dedicated to these ends. Now, can we really say this is not important? Are we willing to call all of that a pipe dream? If we settle for that, we get more of what we've got, more of what we've gotten over the past 70 plus years. And really, that more is less, much less. Now, in the midst of this, old white guys like me think music sucks and art is mostly garbage. Some of us want to go back to 1984, nothing any later than that. And even if you don't agree and you like modern abstract expressionism or dig music from 2002, how do we get more of what we want, what any of us want? We get more by encouraging more of everything, by generating a robust dialogue, a conversation among artists that are actively thriving, economically empowered, independent, and not dependent on a small cadre of tastemakers, regardless of what that taste is. Now, the most common answer I've heard is to sit and wait for government funding. The government needs to do more to save us. They need to bail us out. They need to have more programs. Of course, I could be any elected official and stand up there and say, we've got to create a thriving creative economy, but that just gets one elected. Then we go back to business as usual. Our fundamental divisions make the political sphere the least likely source of answers. And yet, we don't actually need to wait on a better Congress, a more interested president, a different governor, and we can't afford to. No one is coming for us. We're on an island, and the search has been called off. There are no planes or boats coming now. So what do you do? And either we build our own boat, ideally a speedboat, not just an ark for preserving the minimum, or we're stuck here. That's where we are, and we can build it. We have the architecture for building that boat. So let's do that. Okay, how do we do that? Well, in principle, and again, just to touch the theoretical for a moment, we do it with you, with all of us, okay? But let's talk about some more practical ways to get involved. Oddly enough, on our website, we have a menu item called Get Involved. And on that menu item, there are several possible things one can do. Teach and consult. In other words, help artists gain the skills, gain the perspective, gain the shift in mindset necessary to thrive and teach others to thrive. You can attend upcoming events. We have a lot of them. I'll talk more about a couple in a minute, but this is one of those, right? And you can begin to spread the word. You can volunteer. We have a lot of needs to make this mission happen, and many of us are kicking in day and night. You can kick in some of your time and help change the context in which we sell art in the first place. Change the culture which receives the art that we are making. We don't just focus on producing something that is the output of our dreams. We focus on changing the world to be receptive to those dreams. You can organize and host an event. It's really not hard to do. You can have an event in your living room, on your back patio. You can talk about the very issues that we're raising. You can ask the same questions that we've asked and create a discussion. You can plot a way forward that's similar to the way that we're discussing here. You can speak out. Obviously, if we gave you a form letter and said, I need 500 people to send this to their congressman, after the first two letters, they would realize these are clones and they would ignore them. Speaking out is much more robust and individual than that. It's a matter of writing blogs, essays, articles. It's a matter, yes, of writing your congressman a personal letter. It's a matter of getting in front of the podium or hosting events where you have speakers who talk about these matters, starting with perhaps yourself or someone that you know. It's about starting a roundtable and figuring out how in your local community you can bring these issues to the attention of those people who say they are committed to a robust and thriving culture and economy locally. You can fundraise. We don't do this stuff for free. We can't. It costs money to do it. You can help us. And I'll talk in a second a little bit about how one can do that. But you can fundraise lots of different ways. I encourage you to go to our website and click on that fundraise button and look at it. Some of them are surprisingly easy to generate matching funds or additional funds to help support this mission. You can join Artists for CHF. These are artists that are committed to this kind of activism, to this movement, to changing the culture to be receptive to art in the first place and creating a cultural dialogue around the kind of art that we all and individually love. You can become an ambassador. We need lots of different kinds of people. Ambassadors are people that exist in industry and finance and other walks of life that utilize their ability to connect with people, the contacts they have, their example and leadership to help drive this mission forward. And of course, there are lots of ways to give. In addition to fundraising, you can make a donation. So I haven't given you every detail of everything because that's not what this talk is about. And you've seen CHF before. You've seen our programming in this channel, namely Thriving Tuesdays. You've seen our brown bag lunches. You've seen our accelerators and incubators. You've seen our conferences and workshops. And you've seen many of the presentations that we've given about precisely these topics, not just in a theoretical way, but in a practical and tangible and concrete way. We're actually implementing these things. We are creating the things that we give lip service to. So we need your support, obviously, to do that and your participation. There are lots of ways to get involved. You pick the one that is right for you. But what's the other option? We stay on the island and wait for someone else to build the boat. We wait for someone else to come and save us. And what really happens in those situations is we all remain on our individual islands, disconnected from each other. Just take our brown bag lunches, for instance. This is about bringing artists together so that we're not living in silos, building bridges between working creative professionals so that we can begin to collaborate toward a shared vision of a flourishing world. Anything that you can do to help make this mission that we're talking about happen and help us make it happen, help yourself make it happen, is welcome. All right, this talk is necessarily brief because it is my hope that this talk inspires more talks. I don't want to stand up here and give a monologue because more talk instead of more action is not what is actually necessary. So at this time, I'm going to open up to comments and questions. And to share your comments or your questions, someone says, what would you say to people who argue that we can't afford to focus on the big picture or even art when there's so many immediate crises? Like, can we afford to step back? You know, that's the problem with only being tactical. if all we're doing is looking at what's immediately in front of our face, we sort of live hand to mouth, right? We all know somebody who's living hand to mouth. They go from one thing to another, one scheme or another, to raise money to pay this month's rent, to cover this month's bills, to buy groceries for now. And we often sit back and think, do you have a plan? What's the big picture? Can you imagine yourself doing this in 5 more years, or will you burn out? What I would say is we can't afford to not look at the big picture. At some point, we have to take a look around at the ground we're standing on. You know, this is something that the American military learned in Vietnam. You can't just barge into a place and send a bunch of, you know, young, inexperienced recruits into marshland in Asia and not have a clear understanding of what it is you want to achieve beyond the theoretical and what the exit plan is. We find ourselves floundering, and that floundering can take years. I would argue that we're doing it politically. We're doing it in a lot of social contexts. We're doing it militarily. We're certainly doing it in the creative landscape. We're still sort of focused on either the day-to-day only or business as usual. By the way, this is the bane of every CEO. We did a podcast once in the Thriving Artist podcast. It was about how to be the CEO of your own career. I work with a lot of different CEOs and leaders in business. And one of the things many of them tell me is they get so involved in the day-to-day operation of the work they're doing, selling their product or their service, that it's hard for them to focus on the big picture, growth in their industry, what the company's going to look like in 5 years, marketing and selling in the first place, let alone conditioning the public or the buyer market for their work. And I think that is a sign of a company that won't be equipped to compete in a few years. You simply run out of steam as a leader. And I think creative professionals, as the CEOs of their own lives, are also at risk of running out of steam that way. Besides, if we all are just making our artistic widgets in our own silos, in our own boxes, without talking to each other, collaborating to create a more robust culture in the first place, then there's an ever-shrinking market with perhaps less taste than ever, less interested than ever in the work that we're producing. I want to push back a little bit on the thought that artists mostly need a leader. I think we need to train artists to be leaders. I honestly think that our focus at CHF is to point out that artists already are entrepreneurs. In the end, it's not somebody you hire or somebody that works for you whose neck is on the line if you don't sell, if you don't make it, if you don't prosper, if your art doesn't grab a market, it's you. And one of the perhaps unattractive, but nonetheless real realities that I and my colleagues focus on is that if you're the head of your own business and you can't sell, no one can really sell it for you. A lot of people who are in the business of selling their ability to sell for you disagree with that. But I would say that if you don't know your brand story, no one else is going to fabricate it for you. If you don't know how to reach your clients, no one else is going to come up with that magic pill. And in the end, do you really want to stake everything, as well as the cost, on the idea that if you just find the right person to do the talking for you, somehow you'll connect with your public? I don't think that's our message at all. I think we believe that art is a business and artists should run it. And so ultimately, we're teaching artists to be those thriving entrepreneurs. It is possible. We are doing it. We've got tons of examples. If you go to our site, click on our work, hover over our work and click impact. We've got tons of examples of people that are doing that. Lots of stories under our artist stories, lots of numbers that are showing that we make a huge financial impact on individual artists' lives. Their prices go up, their sales go up, their contacts go up, their success goes up. And it's largely due to taking their own business seriously, treating themselves as entrepreneurs, and at some point deciding you can always get help. I'm not knocking help, but you still have to be able to do it. That's part of the discussion that we create. Penelope says, how does this plan to fill the world with thriving artists actually get implemented? What's the first step? Are successful individual entrepreneurs enough? Yeah, well, I mean, we did talk a little bit about that, but I would say that one portion of that is to equip artists with that mindset that you are entrepreneurs and you have to do it. But second is to connect those artist entrepreneurs with the skills they need. That's why we do the training we do, which is straight up business training for artists that every other industry comes to take for granted. And artists typically don't get. Artists are often left on the side of the road. And it's assumed that you're supposed to be living on your cousin's sofa or starving for your art and not making money. That's dirty and polluted. Why would you learn entrepreneurial skills? You're an artist, for goodness sake. You're a creative. Stay in your box. We'll let you know when you're useful and whether your stuff's any good. So that approach tells us, nope, we're going to train people with the skills. And then the other portion of that is to connect artists with each other so they can start building a network, a local community, and a global community of peers, not only to help each other prosper, because prospering is always a collaborative effort. Nobody thrives in a box alone. I don't know why they tell artists, just go back to your studio and make your art and don't worry your head about it. Because no other industry does that. No other industry on the planet says you can be completely alone in a box and thrive. It's a recipe for failure, that's ingrained in our society. No wonder we don't have a flourishing culture. But on top of that, and you might say, oh, I think our culture is flourishing. I see art all the time. Are you really going down to the local Starbucks, the local coffee shop, and saying to yourself, I'm so glad we live in a modern renaissance? Are you really looking out your door, watching the news, and saying, I'm so glad art and creative energy is 25% of what's driving our society right now versus volatility, conflict, violence? I don't think we are living in a culture that we could call flourishing, but I do think we get there. We get there partly, as I said, by connecting artists with each other so that they can exchange those skills, but also so that they can form a movement with this vision. Because if all we do is get the skills, then we're just making ourselves prosperous and it doesn't create a cumulative effect. But I will say that I think the way that we get there is the three things that I just mentioned, because we know it works. We've done it. If you don't believe it works, look at our impact page. Look at our report on the working artist. We have the data. The data through many, many instances, repeatable instances, we know this works. So I encourage you to focus on those three actions. Jonathan says, I'd love to see CHF find a way to bring the skills you teach to schools, both art departments and art schools. It would be so great to have students learn this before they leave for the big wide world so they can start better preparing. Hey, Jonathan, you and me both. And we are doing some of that. We have been invited by various colleges and schools to do these kinds of training. Of course, I would like to see more of that. And I'll tell you what the key to that is. The key to that, this is why we refer to this as a movement. This is why we ask you to get involved. We can only trumpet this so loudly, but everyone in this Thriving Tuesday is a voice for this. And so we encourage you to talk to your local school, your local artist training academy, your local primary and secondary schools about learning about the art business with the Clark Huillings Foundation. We have all kinds of possible opportunities available for those folks, but it starts with getting a passionate conversation. And that starts with not, hey, these guys can teach you guys some stuff if you're interested, but it starts with talking about this vision. You know, when you buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks, you're not buying a cup of coffee. I would argue, is it even that great a coffee? Come on, I can make coffee at home. You're buying an environment. You're buying an experience. You're buying a social context. You're buying a pleasant place to relax, unwind, to do some work, or you're buying speed and good coffee that's consistent every time. But you're buying more than a cup of coffee. And when you work with the Clark Huillings Foundation, you're getting more than just training on how to succeed as an artist. You're getting a flourishing, thriving culture built on a thriving creative economy. So have that conversation with those schools and you'll see us in more of those contexts. Another one, Robin. Yes, recent graduates with art degrees are in dire need of entrepreneurial skills that CHF offers. I would argue that's true. I would argue that we focus a lot in art training programs on technique, on craft, and then we send you out there like turtles aimed at the ocean. Good luck. I hope you make it. I remember the swimming coach when I was a kid saying, what we do, we're not quite allowed to do it, but if the principal's not here today, I'm still going to do it, is we tossed you in the deep end of the pool. If you don't drown, you must know how to swim. So I'm not saying every school is the same. Some schools make an admirable attempt to do this. We focus exclusively on this as the way forward. We are convinced that you don't get a thriving creative culture without a thriving creative economy. And so we focus on that economic aspect, the business and sales, and other entrepreneurial skills training for artists. So yes, there's a potential partnership there, but also I think schools do need to do more of this, whether they partner for us or they pony up and do it themselves. This has to happen one way or another. And that's part of the conversation we need to have. And guess what? Us saying it is only part of the equation, but you as artists, when you connect with each other in our brown bag lunches, in salons in your home, in events that you have on your patio, and you collectively say that, people listen 10 times more. And that's what we would like to help you facilitate. Robiolo says, there are a lot of immersive projects that need artists, big businesses, exhibitions, Van Gogh, Kahlo, going on around the country. I would agree with that. I would also say, there are plenty of things that we don't immediately think of as fine art that need artists. Honestly, artists helped, in the Renaissance, artists helped, and in every era of man up until the post-World War II era, artists were intricately involved in advancing every sector of society. They weren't left in a silo, in a barn over here, making pretty things, ornamentations for our enjoyment, and then competing with Xbox and whatever's on Netflix this week and whatever new app is on your phone and the ongoing drama in the courtrooms between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. But instead, no, I'm not picking on either one of those people. I'm just saying at some point, art ceases to be anything more than another competing media form, unless we bring creative intelligence to bear, and we bring that to bear in sectors other than just the production of fine art. And there's a lucrative set of opportunities there. We have artists involved in reconceiving of how a space works for human beings at ball fields. We have artists involved in the space program, not just illustrating whatever they're doing, but having conversations with what it might look like to live on Mars, right? How does our environment feel? Because artists bring a unique set of elements to that in the form of creative intelligence that you don't necessarily get out of an accountant or a bureaucrat or a mathematician. Those roles are necessary too. But without artists' voice in the culture languishes. And that's exactly what you're seeing. Where are the artists when we're having our discussions about the social and political events of the day? We don't hear artists as a unified voice. Every debate that you see happening on Twitter, pull up Google News. Look at the conversations around the latest shooting, arms control, abortion, every other topic that's out there. We don't necessarily even think that artists have anything to say about that. And our response when somebody does speak up is just sing, or just make your movies, or just paint your paintings. Don't get involved, because we are divided. But artists hold the key to that. It's always been art that unified a culture, brought us together. It's always been artists that do what good salespeople do, which is get us all looking the same way at something spectacular, sharing a vision. Without you people, we're doomed. I say it again. You might think I'm all doom and gloom. I'm not. This is about hope. But without you people, we're doomed. I'm doomed. I don't want to live in that world. So help us. I got another comment here from Robbie. Where is the middle class buying art for their homes? I think questions like that are perfect to bring up in our brown bag lunches and the other peer networking environments that we create. Because guess who has the answer? Are there artists that are actually doing this and succeeding? This is, again, the point I want to make. Every other industry has peer networking groups where people succeed by learning how others in their field are succeeding and by exchanging this cumulative knowledge. Artists alone are told to go back into their isolated bunkers, work on their stuff, and not collaborate, not communicate, and not build a groundswell of peers and a movement out of themselves. I think it's because what would happen if they do? I think it would challenge a lot of shibboleths. I think it would challenge a lot of cultural sacred cows. And that's exactly what we have to do. I think those questions can generate a lot of conversations when you get together with other artists. I think if we're not thinking about these things, if we're just thinking, where can I go? And should I use Etsy? Is Instagram right for me? I don't think we ever get past that stuff. We're not trying to have every answer and to accomplish every portion of what's necessary in the world to create a 21st century renaissance. We think we have something that's unique, that's not being done widely, that's being, in fact, neglected and ignored, which is having artists think about their role in society and their role in their own careers and lives as entrepreneurs. Take the role of CEO of their own business, take back the reins of their careers, blueprint their futures, determine what they are, gain the skills necessary to run a successful business, become a successful middle-class artist. Not everybody has to be Van Gogh or be a household name or be famous. And not everybody has to be at the other end of the spectrum if they're not that, which is a starving artist living on their cousin's sofa. So those skills are something that we don't find widely taught, not in an effective way. You can always get a course on how to use Instagram for artists. There's always somebody teaching some workshop, but I think you have to look at the big picture and the total output of an organization and see whether it's right for you. And I think also inspiring those conversations, helping artists congeal together as a movement, not led by us or led by other people or led by other experts, but led from within by themselves, artists-driven federations. I think that is something that we're committed to that you don't find very commonly. I think oftentimes you do find organizations that want to be the top, be the leader, be in control. I'm just saying that I think what we do is rare. And I think the alternative to what we do is a culture that doesn't quite make it the way we all hope it does. I don't know if you looked around over the past, I've looked since 2015, I've been looking at it going, we're not really happy anymore, are we? It's been weird out there, to say the least, but I don't think you've looked at the past year and went, this is the most joyous time in our society. And if you either have to kind of say, this is how it is now, and it's only going to get worse and live on that island, or you have to plot a way forward. And I think when you go to our website, it says committed to a flourishing culture right at the top. You know what we're about. So if you throw in with us, you're going to get this focus again and again. We hope you will, obviously. All right, I've done enough talking. I hope you'll go to clarkhealingsfoundation.org/give or just click the give button on our website. We're serious about this. We're not quitting, folks. We're not backing up. I hope you're with us. We're not just looking at today or tomorrow. We're looking at the long-term landscape and the world that we want to live in for the rest of our lives. Join us with that, and I'll see you next time. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, an educational feature of the Clark Healings Foundation. For more information on the Clark Healings Foundation, visit clarkhealingsfoundation.org, where you'll find more episodes, ongoing learning and networking opportunities, and creative information on how to help create a flourishing culture replete with art and creative intelligence. If you've enjoyed this program and found it valuable, remember this show depends on support from listeners like you. Consider becoming a regular or one-time sponsor of this podcast by clicking Give at the top of the website. Again, it's clarkhealingsfoundation.org. I'm Daniel DeGree. Thank you for listening. Tune.